Let's connect with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. Now, before we bring Ken into the discussion, we want to hear your questions about politics, about what's going on in Washington, D.C. Call us at 651-227-6000, toll-free 800-242-2828, and online, you can tweet me at CFarrellEcon. That's at CFarrellEcon. Ken joins us from Washington, D.C. How you doing, Ken?
Good morning, Chris.
Now,
How about those Vikings?
I was just going to ask you, did you see the game?
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. My goodness. When I think of that missed kick 2 years ago, was it Blair Walsh who missed that kick 2 years ago? And what Minnesota fans went through 2 years ago? Boy, did they get redemption on Sunday, that's for sure.
Oh, it was wonderful. Now, I would just love to continue to talk about the Vikings, but instead we have to talk about what's going on in Washington, D.C. What I want you to do, Ken, I'm going to give you an impossible task. Cut through the heated rhetoric, the blame game that's going on, and how real is the risk of a government shutdown?
Oh, I think it's very real. I really do, because both parties seem to be fighting with it among themselves. Certainly among the Democrats, there are Democrats who say that we should have no deal whatsoever unless there's language that would protect the Dreamers from deportation. And there are other Democrats in mostly Trump states who are up for re-election this year, like Claire McCaskill in Missouri or Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota,
right,
who say that, look, basically we need to have a deal because we can't shut down the government. We can't be blamed for a shutdown of the government. And on the Republican side, there were some Republicans like Lindsey Graham who definitely want a deal. There are others who say, look, let's play politics. Let's make sure we blame the Democrats for any kind of a shutdown. The deadline is Friday. And my guess is, once again, and it would be the fourth time, it's going to be a short-term extension until they get their act together. But the real question is, can they ever get their act together?
Well, can they keep doing these short-term extensions? I mean, does that really work?
Well, it works. I mean, there's nothing to say that they can't do it. It sure tells you about the lack of their ability in Congress to work out a deal and to work across party lines and across the aisle. And it doesn't look good, but I think nothing would look worse than a shutdown. I mean, ostensibly, you'd say we should blame the Republicans for the shutdown because they control the White House. They control both chambers of Congress. But, you know, with Trump and his ability to deflect, I mean, suddenly the focus is not what Donald Trump may have said inside of negotiations. It may be that Dickie Durbin didn't tell the truth. So he has this amazing ability to deflect, to deflect blame. And, you know, the Republicans will be ready to do that if there was a shutdown.
Okay, so government shutdown, not a good thing, doesn't sound good, doesn't look good. But, you know, for people here in Minnesota or other states, I mean, what does a government shutdown really mean?
Well, it means that you can't fund the government. And, of course, the last time this happened was in 2013 when President Obama was in the White House and the Republicans, led by Ted Cruz, said that we should shut down the government for X, Y, or Z reasons. And everybody thought at the time that the Republicans would pay the political price. This is in 2013. And then the next year, they did really well. They did really well in the battle for Congress. So to make a prediction, who's going to suffer the political price for this is obviously premature. But for everybody who doesn't have a horse in the race, who's just watching how government works or doesn't work, it's just one more sign that things in Washington are not working, and perhaps maybe the only way the only place where things can work are in state legislatures, and that's why the elections this fall for state legislatures are more important than ever.
So, okay, Ken, so you're the political junkie, so maybe you can understand
kinda,
this.
Yeah.
Maybe you can explain this to us. So DACA, so this is deferred action for childhood arrivals. Now,
right,
you just go back a couple days ago, President Trump was saying, I love the Dreamers. We're going to have a deal. Just put something in front of my desk. It's going to get signed. I don't really care what it says. Now we have this definite chill. We're not going to sign anything. So can Congress reach a deal on DACA?
Well, they could. I mean, obviously, the people who care enough about it are fighting to make it happen. But Chris, the way you described the turnabout in Donald Trump, that's exactly what the president does. He does want a deal. He's really kind of like the damn the details. I don't care how we get a deal. Let's just make it happen. And he's very good at that. But then you have conservatives like Stephen Miller in the White House and members of Congress who say, oh, like Tom Cotton, the anti-immigration Republican senator from Arkansas, who says that, you know, a DACA deal is not good for us. Are we going to shut down the government because of these illegal immigrants, these people who are here illegally? So there's a battle. So there's a battle for Donald Trump's heart and mind. And right now it seems like the hardliners, whatever you want to call them, seem to have control of that, because Trump once upon a time was saying, look, I want a deal. I want a deal. Let's have a deal. And now he's saying not so fast.
So is this one of those things that feeds into the sense that, you know, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, just a sort of the sense that Washington is in its own world? Because when you look at the polling, you know, it, what, 80%? Doesn't matter whether you're Republican, Democrat, 80% are in favor of, you know, the DACA staying here. Or you look at the Children's Health Insurance Program, which, you know, covers low-income children. And again, I don't know what the actual poll numbers are, but I'm guessing 80 or plus percent saying this is a good thing. And then take a look what's going on in D.C.
Exactly. Well, I mean, look, there's a big disparity between how Americans feel about allowing these dreamers, these children brought here illegally when they were children, to stay in the country, and a large percentage of the country said, wait a second, are we going to shut down the government? Are we going to jeopardize aid to the military or, you know, for defense spending because of these people? So you know, there's good politics and there's politics. And right now, I think the latter is winning the day in Washington.
All right. So if you have a question about good politics or politics as defined by Ken Rudin, give us a call at 651-227-6000, toll free 800-242-2828. Now, the major piece of legislation at the end of 2017 was the tax cuts. How is the selling of the tax cuts going?
I think better than I expected. I mean, first of all, When it was being debated, it was extremely unpopular. The Democratic argument that it was going to big business and the very rich seemed to be winning the day. But then there seems to be anecdotal evidence around the country that people will or are benefiting from it. I mean, it's the only thing that the Republicans have to show for the first year in the Trump presidency. But right now, I think it's doing better than people thought. Again, we'll see on tax time how well it's doing. But again, I think obviously the Republicans want to build on more than that. And right now, shutting down the government would not be on my list of things I'd like to bring to the voters, saying we couldn't, you know, we control everything. You gave us the reins, and yet we couldn't get government to work. I think the tax cut bill is slowly increasing in popularity among the American people. We'll just see if the numbers and the dollars are real.
Okay, so let's take a question from a listener. I believe this is Cliff in Cold Spring. Is that right?
Yes.
So what's your question, Cliff?
Well, after the tax bill was signed, there was at least one news story about PAYGO, or pay-as-you-go, and that if Trump signs the tax bill before December 31st, there were some automatic consequences, programs would be cut, this sort of thing. If he waited until the new year, those drastic actions would be put off until 2019.
Okay. So, Ken, PAYGO?
Well, I mean, the big story, I mean, this may even be more about the budget itself and funding the government than the tax bill. But obviously, there's a thing called reconciliation in this country that basically that keeps levels of spending for military and non-military things at certain levels. And of course, Republicans want to increase the level of spending for the military, whereas the Democrats want to do it for non-military reasons. I think a lot of the things that we talked about as PAYGO and things like that will come to the forefront in these budget negotiations that are going on now. And what's interesting, because unlike the tax bill that passed in 2017, this needs 60 votes in the Senate, and it needs 218 votes in the House. So it's one thing to pass a tax bill with only Republican votes, and that's what happened. But right now, if there are going to be any kind of changes, any kind of compromises, you need to pull in Democratic votes as well. And that's what, and that's why these negotiations are so crucial.
Okay, so the that's why you've, as you mentioned, there's been a lot of discussion about the need for a more bipartisan tone in Washington, D.C. Not succeeding too well at that, but there's been a lot of murmurings about this. But then you also have mostly, I believe it's Paul Ryan, making noises about, look, we need to address entitlement spending, Social Security, Medicare, which doesn't seem to me that's going to lead to a whole lot of bipartisanship warmth.
Oh, no, and it never has. It's always, as they always say, Social Security and Medicare is that third rail of American politics. You touch it and you pay the price. There are some things on the table, on the wish list, that theoretically could be done with bipartisan support, like infrastructure. I mean, Donald Trump, even when he was campaigning for the presidency, was talking about the awful condition of the roads and transportation and things like that, and maybe infrastructure and bridges that are falling apart. And that's one way you can get together. But right now, it doesn't seem like anything else could possibly work. And it almost seems like, I mean, I don't know what the rest of the country thinks, but I mean, when you have, I mean, I'm just thinking of one of the stories that came out over the last couple of days, the fact that the president may or may not have, his people may have spent hush money to quiet down an affair Donald Trump had with a porn star back in 2006. And in the past, that would have taken down any other politician. And now everybody's just like rolling their eyes and saying, well, what's new? What's next? So, you know, for all the things that needs to be done, and there's so many things that need to be done, this president is working on rules that he's created, rules that he follows. And right now, Congress, you know, Congress almost doesn't have much of a choice but either to follow in his footsteps, or follow his lead, or just stand up to him.
So, I mean, and speaking about the atmosphere that we're in, this unusual atmosphere, I want to go to Abdi in St. Paul.
Hi there. Thanks. Yeah, I had a question for Ken in terms of the good politics and bad politics. We saw, of course, the comments attributed to President Trump. But I don't know if I trust someone like Dick Durbin, who, you know, senator from Illinois, who said chain migration was an offensive term towards African Americans. But yet he used the term back in 2010, speaking about DACA not having chain migration. So I think right now Dick Durbin also said if Trump wants to prove he's not a racist, he should pass DACA. To me, that's just asinine. It really spits in the face of my friends who are DACA recipients. Even though I'm a Trump supporter, I want people who have DACA to stay here. And in turn, we get border security so we don't lead on other people to be misled. So I don't really trust Dick Durbin, especially with his hypocrisy. And I want to ask Ken what he thinks of that.
All right. Well, Ken?
Well, you know, Dick Durbin, I mean, this is the kind of deflection that the president does very well, that that when the president said or allegedly said what he said at that closed meeting, and then Dick Durbin went before the cameras and said he absolutely said it, the Republicans are now bringing out talking points against Dick Durbin, saying the incendiary things that Durbin himself has said over the years. And I understand that. But this is what happens when there's an investigation into, for example, alleged Russian interference in the election, and they go after the James Comeys of the world, or the GPS companies and Glenn Simpson, the people who are investigating it. That's what they do. They do it better than anybody else. But more important in the argument about what to give up to get DACA people to stay here, it doesn't have to be a wall. I mean, there are legitimate concerns, homeland security, border security things that the Republicans are insisting on. And I think that it's very possible that an agreement can be forged on this. The answer is not focusing on what Dick Durbin may have said 10 years ago and to make him sound like he's unreliable. I think the thing is, first of all, I think, one, that's a distraction. But two, we shouldn't dismiss what the Republicans are talking about on border security. There are legitimate concerns that the Republicans feel should be part of the negotiations. And I think there are a handful of Democrats who are willing to make that kind of trade if they can get some kind of a deal.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to have to say goodbye, Ken. But thank you very much. This has been great.
Thank you so much, Chris.
Ken Rudin is the host of the Political Junkie podcast.